I'm Bob Mann, filling in this morning for Jim Inkster, who's off today. On today's show, we're talking about the scourge of modern slavery, or human trafficking, as it's mostly called. It's a problem in Louisiana, not just in some far reaches of Africa or Asia, and it's happening in Baton Rouge, perhaps right under our noses. What's the scope of the problem? What can we do about it? How can we help? Those are some of the questions we'll be asking our guests this morning. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number to call is 225-297-5633, or if you're outside the Baton Rouge area, 877-217-5757. We're joined first by Dr. Laura Murphy of the Modern Slavery Project at Loyola University in New Orleans. Dr. Murphy received her PhD in African and African-American Studies at Harvard in 2008. Her research focuses on African literature, historical and modern global slavery, post-colonial studies, global literatures, and Black Atlantic cultures. Her most recent book was Metaphor and the Slave Trade in West African Literature, published by Ohio University Press in 2012. She's currently editing a collection of first-person narratives of modern slavery, and she runs the Modern Slavery Project at Loyola. Dr. Murphy, welcome. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
You and your colleagues at the Modern Slavery Project have recently produced the first ever report on human trafficking in Louisiana and the New Orleans metro area and across Louisiana. Tell us about that report that you produced, why you undertook it, and what did you find?
Well, when I first returned to Louisiana, I grew up down here. When I first returned to Louisiana and people knew that I was working on human trafficking, they always asked me, what do we know about what's happening in New Orleans? What do we know about what's happening in Louisiana? And the truth is we know very, very little. We have very little sense of the numbers. We have very little data being collected. And so I set out to collect and synthesize everything we do know and everything that is available for us to know about what's going on regarding human trafficking here in Louisiana, in part to say we don't know much, in part to sort of put out a call for more data collection, for better resources for human trafficking organizations, for more research. So that the report does give us some information about the organizations that are addressing human trafficking, about the increase in our awareness of trafficking, about the increased law enforcement presence on the issue of trafficking, increased training on the issue. And so we are making strides here in Louisiana, but there's a lot more we need to.
For our listeners' benefit, can you define human trafficking? What is it? Or modern slavery? What are the boundaries of everything that would fall under that definition?
Sure. When we describe human trafficking, when we define human trafficking in Louisiana or in the United States or even by international law, we're talking about people who are compelled to work through force, fraud, or coercion. Force is violent force. Fraud is trickery, as you might imagine. But coercion is more like psychological violence, psychological coercion. And so that includes people who are working in agricultural fields, people who are domestic laborers, maybe people who are construction workers. I've seen cases of people who are hair braiders who are forced laborers. I've seen cases of choir boys, actually, of crawfish processing plant workers. And then there are also, of course, people in the sex trade who are forced into trading sex. In terms of sex, if a person is under the age of 18 and they're engaged in commercial sex acts, we also consider that trafficking, so that young people who are trading sex are not criminalized but considered victims and provided services they need to help them to, you know, get their life right. When we talk about modern slavery, we use the word slavery because when we're talking about these cases of trafficking, we're really talking about people who are forced to work without pay, under threat of violence, without the means to escape. And when we think of that scenario, when we think of a person trapped in that situation, we realize that that is, in fact, modern slavery. And I don't use that word slavery lightly. I study slavery as my research, but I also grew up here in Louisiana where slavery's legacy has taken an enormous toll on inequality here. And I don't think that word is a metaphor. I use that word very specifically. And what I'm seeing when I work with survivors are people who were forced to work without pay and could not escape. And it's very serious, and I use that word with all the gravity that it entails.
We're talking to Dr. Laura Murphy of Loyola's Modern Slavery Project in New Orleans about the problem of human trafficking in Louisiana and around the country. I don't know if you've seen Jimmy Carter's new book, A Call to Action, Women, Religion, Violence, and Power, but he has a chapter devoted to human slavery, sex trafficking, and he says this in this chapter, although the U.S. Department of State has estimated that there are at least 60,000 people being held against their will in the United States, only 138 traffickers were convicted in this country in 2012. Why is the country, states, and our national government doing so little about this problem?
That's an incredibly important question, and if I had the answer to that, I would fix it. but I can give you some leads. One is funding. You know, here in Louisiana, we have a new bill on the. On the floor, and we regarding trafficking, and it is now in the Appropriations Committee, and we will see how it comes out once it gets out of the Appropriations Committee. If it costs money, it usually doesn't fly, and so the funding is trouble. But at the federal level, we have indeed had funding allocated, but for a variety of reasons, that money or the funding allocated to the services. But not, it doesn't actually go out and get allocated to the programs that need it often. That is actually improving in the last couple of years, and the government is spending a lot of money addressing the issue, but it has been a problem in prosecution. We also have a problem that a lot of times people are looking for perfect cases, cases that will no doubt be considered trafficking because the laws are so new, people are so unaware. I think that prosecutors are much more interested in finding perfect cases that will absolutely win, and this is a problem as well. Sometimes people who are traffickers are also prosecuted under other laws and are not held responsible for trafficking, but might be held responsible for pandering or some lesser offense. And that is a debatable question of whether or not that is a reasonable response. But I think there's a complex of problems that are making it so that prosecutions aren't happening as regularly as we would think. I think it's also very difficult to find traffickers. It's a very hidden population, whether we're talking about labor or sex trafficking. And so knowing who is in charge of laborers in a strawberry field in Ponchatoula, for instance, is very difficult. And being able to identify whether those people are forced laborers or free laborers can often be difficult. So I think identification has also been a struggle, and I think training our police is going to be integral in making that happen.
In the release that Governor Jindal's office put out in May when he and others announced the collection of bills that are going through the legislature to toughen up our laws on human trafficking, he cites an analysis done by a group called Shared Hope International that says Baton Rouge ranks in the top 10 cities in the nation for human trafficking. And I think in your report, you acknowledge that that New Orleans and Baton Rouge and southern Louisiana is particularly susceptible to human trafficking. What is it about Louisiana or this part of Louisiana that makes us more susceptible to this problem?
Well, I'm going to be honest and say I don't know how these numbers get collected. Mm-hmm. It's really a mystery to determine which city is more prevalent, has more prevalence of trafficking. It seems to me like every time I turn around, Dayton, Ohio is the most, has the most cases of trafficking in the United States, or Akron, or, some random town that, I find suspicious. Baton Rouge is in the top 10. I don't know how they're getting these numbers because we don't have good numbers. But I will tell you that here in Louisiana, we do have a lot of attractive, a lot of things that attract traffickers, especially if we're talking about sex trafficking. We have a lot of events that draw a lot of tourists here. And so it's true that people who are in the sex trade do come to places to sell sex that are going to have a customer base, right? Now, whether or not that means that new people are recruited into the sex trade or forced into the sex trade as a result of these events, it's very much debated. And I think that most evidence points to the fact that people aren't actually recruited for these events. However, people who are already in trafficking situations, are already held by force by a pimp, are brought to places like New Orleans or Baton Rouge that have a lot of events that attract huge numbers of tourists. In terms of labor trafficking, we also have a problem. After Katrina, a lot of laborers came to this area to find work. And some of those people were immigrant laborers, some of them were not, some of them were documented, some of them were not. But people who came here looking for work, people who need work, are vulnerable to people trying to coerce them into forced labor situations. And so we had a lot of cases in the wake of Katrina and still today of people who are here because we have thriving industry, because we have huge agricultural industries that provide jobs and construction that provide jobs. And they find that they need work so badly that they are willing to follow a shady person, to take a job that seems sketchy, even if they think it might be trouble. They need that job, and so they take it, and that makes them vulnerable to trafficking as well.
You alluded a few minutes ago to these bills that are working their way through the legislature, and you have suggested, and others have suggested too, that they're they may be good bills, but the funding for enforcing them may not be there. Is that a concern?
It's a huge concern, because the number one thing we need to do, in my opinion, is start to turn our focus on survivors, on the people who are victims of this, and have a survivor-centered approach to addressing trafficking. Louisiana has some of the toughest bills in the state regarding trafficking, and by that I mean we have the stiffest penalties for people who are prosecuted for trafficking, for traffickers themselves. But more important to my mind is having services available for when people, men, women, children, are identified as being trafficked so that they can successfully leave those situations and become less vulnerable to being trafficked again, right? And so that requires money. We have very few shelters. Here in Louisiana, and those shelters have very few beds. And there are very few trafficking-specific services available to people who are identified as trafficking victims. And we fail every year to attach money to the bills that we have. In addition, it costs money to train police, and we need to do that training pretty desperately. And I think that the only way we can get that to be a mandatory thing is if we put money behind it. And so my big push is always we need the funding.
Dr. Murphy, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate the work you're doing and you've done, and your report is really required reading for anyone interested in this issue in Louisiana. So thank you for all that you're doing, and thanks for joining us this morning for this discussion.
Thank you for having me. And if people want to see the report, they can go to our website, the NOLAHumanTrafficking.org. And also that collection of first-person narratives called Survivors of Slavery is now out and can be purchased on Amazon. And it funds organizations. The proceeds from that book funds organizations that do actually assist.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. We'll be back after this brief timeout. This is the Jim Inkster Show. I'm Bob Mann, sitting in for Jim Inkster today, and we're talking about human trafficking or modern slavery and its effects and its presence in Louisiana and the Baton Rouge area. I'm joined now by Lee and Laura Domain of Baton Rouge. Lee is an entrepreneur, international speaker, and author, and his wife Laura is a passionate advocate for providing a place of hope and safety for victims of human trafficking. Thanks to both of you for being with us this morning. Good morning. Hello? Good morning?
Yep.
Good morning. Sorry. How are you this morning?
We're doing well. Thank you for having us, Bob.
Thank you so much, and thanks for the work you do. Tell us what led you to this work, being involved in helping people who were caught up in human trafficking.
In 2007, my wife and I were approached by an organization trying to get started in Europe, and they had kind of introduced us to human trafficking. And to be honest with you, I didn't really believe it in what they were telling me. So we said, look, we want to go and see it. So we traveled to Europe and actually the country of Greece, spent some time there, and were just totally wrecked by what we saw. And when we came back, we said, you know, I mean, one, we're going to help these folks, but then we also became very much aware and educated, then found out that it was happening in our own country, and then not even our own country, our own state, and then in even the city of Baton Rouge. So we launched what was called Trafficking Hope to really bring awareness first, but it's grown a lot more from just an awareness campaign.
So how we talked a little bit on the earlier segment with Laura Murphy about the extent of the problem in Louisiana and in Baton Rouge. The governor's office is saying that Baton Rouge is in the top 10 cities for human trafficking. Is that your experience? Is that your sense of how serious the problem is here?
Bob, I can tell you this. Since 2009, we've identified over 180 victims, and that's statewide for us. You know, we've reached about 100,000 people in awareness events, helping train state police, and then helping start with the Human Trafficking Task Force in Louisiana. What's happened is now that Louisiana, both Baton Rouge and New Orleans, are what state police call destination cities. And, you know, we've asked one victim, which you gain a lot of intelligence from your victims of really what's going on, which brings about great training and so forth that you could help law enforcement with. But this one victim made a comment that her trafficker told her, she said, well, why are you taking me to Baton Rouge? And this was her comment. Basically, the guy had said that Baton Rouge is a small city, but it has a big demand.
So
it's demand. It's two things. It's demand.
So this is local demand? Money. They're talking about locals demanding sex for hire.
Right, correct. Correct. Both, you have the I-10 corridor, and a lot of these girls are brought in from out of town. A lot of them are brought in, you know, when New Orleans has a major sporting event, you know, you'll see a drastic increase in girls that are being brought in from other areas, as well as girls that are, you know, trafficked from even their own family members.
So in response to this this problem and this need for, especially for victim housing, once they're out of this situation, you and your wife, Laura, secured a 32-acre site here in Baton Rouge to provide 24-hour restoration care to these young people. And I understand you opened in September of last year, Hope House of Louisiana. Tell us about your facility.
Yeah, well, in 2012, we purchased a 32-acre, actually, campus. It had buildings that were on it already. It's about 30, 45 minutes outside of Baton Rouge. We started a lengthy renovation process for about, I don't know, I guess it was a year and a half. We opened September of 2013. And what Hope House is, it provides transitional, short-term, and long-term care up to 2 years for women. Right now, it's women who are 18 and over. And they're going to get basically a holistic care, not only from, you know, psychological issues, but dealing with vocational issues, dealing with, you know, trauma, dealing with physical needs. We've got great partnerships with the medical community that has really helped us tremendously with providing care. We also, for the residents who need transitional care that are trying to get back to a home environment that actually is not a negative environment, will provide transitional care for them. Since September, we actually have helped over 44 women providing that type of care. And so housing is a critical need. We launched something that's real important. We launched what was called our CARES Initiative. And CARES is an acronym called for Coalition, Awareness, Rescue, Education, and Services. And it's a holistic approach because you need everyone at the table if you're going to make any kind of a dent in this thing. And coalition is bringing together law enforcement, legislators, bringing together NGOs, churches, faith-based organizations, and just general the community. Your awareness is when you've seen seen, maybe seen some of our billboards around the state or around town, trying to get people to wake up and see this is happening in our great state and in our city of Baton Rouge. Then on the rescue side, that's supporting law enforcement and helping them with the rescue of a victim. The education side then brings, that's education in the school system. That's trying to educate, which leads to prevention for young people. And then the services piece, which is the Hope House piece, that is providing the much-needed services that once you go through this, you identify victims, then they need a place to live. They need a place to get restored, maybe get a GED, get vocational training, and even potential job placement so that they can support themselves.
Where is your funding coming from?
We get about 98% of our dollars are all private and corporate dollars. We get a 2%. We had a federal grant. We were a subgrantee for about 3 years, but the majority of it is all private funding.
We're talking with Lee Domain of Trafficking Hope, a local organization in Baton Rouge that operates Hope House of Louisiana, dealing with victims of human trafficking, and we're talking about the extent of this problem in Louisiana and Baton Rouge. Lee, what is your sense of how well the local law enforcement authorities are equipped to deal with this problem? Do local law enforcement officers, Baton Rouge Police, East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Department, are they trained to the extent that they can recognize human trafficking when they see it?
You know, that's a great question. Representative Neil Aberson has a bill that he's introduced in the legislature that really addresses this. The answer is some are and some have not been because of, one, getting educated to it, lack of resources, and really a program and a kind of a lane to run in that can provide the training at a local level. State police has done a phenomenal job. Also, you know, the sheriffs have done a great job, and even city police, they're all willing to embrace this. They just need the resources. And so we as a state have done probably as good as any state in the country in over the last couple of years, once that you find out that this is happening, really start to put the things in place so that you can deal with it. And I think our state has really become a model for the rest of the state. Shared Hope International has a rating system that basically is a report card for all the states. 2-3 years ago, we were a C. We then moved up to a B, and we're one of only three states that's an A. And that shows that basically when you come together as a, like the Human Trafficking Task Force, you can bring together all the resources, get everybody talking, and really provide us a level of synergy that you can bring the organizations together, that's legislation, law enforcement, services, all as one, then you can move and get things done a whole lot more effective. And I think our city and our parish and our state is fully committed to this. The legislation pieces are now catching up to that, which I think is going to put us in a good place to help a lot of people.
Well, you mentioned resources, and I'm not sure if you heard our previous guest, Dr. Murphy from Loyola, but she raised the question and the concern that while the laws may be strong and getting stronger, that the resources to enforce them may not be there. Is that something that you're concerned about?
You know, I think that we've always looked at it as we went out and just did it, and we found that, you know, through the private sector, we were able to get, you know, and personally even invest quite a bit of money in all of this. And so we looked at it and said, we were going to get it done. I think that the funding will be available. I know there's just some federal grants as it relates to services and law enforcement training that are available. They're limited, but they are available. I think it's really where the private and the public sector, I think that we as the private community really need to come alongside and look at ways that are there grants that corporations can actually do. You know, the fact of us just waiting to create money, I think our budget and our state is a little strapped right at the moment, but we have to look at other ways to try and fund this because, you know, just saying that we don't have the money to do it doesn't cut it.
Tell me a bit about the some of the young people who are currently in your program and the experience they've had and the experience they are having now that they are out of that situation.
I'll share. My wife can share some of that as.
Is Laura with us?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Here, Laura's with us as well. So I'm gonna turn it over to the ball.
Thank you. Hi, Laura. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us. I will tell you a quick story of one of our residents that we rescued, and a lot of people have questions as to how does this happen? Does this really happen here? And I can tell a story that happened right here in Baton Rouge. And it was a few days before Christmas. She was this resident was actually in Houston area. She was taken from Houston. She was being trafficked in Houston. She was brought to New Orleans to work in New Orleans. There was an event there. And her John at the time, her John strangled her, beat her, and really abused her in a significant way. She escaped to Baton Rouge without her trafficker. She escaped to Baton Rouge, and she went to a hotel on College Drive. She was there at a hotel. She ran in, and she grabbed a phone book and looked up she looked up Battered Women's Shelter. She called there and told them what was happening. She knew she had a short amount of time before her trafficker caught up with her. And she said, this is what's happening. They, in turn, said, oh, no, you need to call Trafficking Hope. This is who can help you. And so she called Trafficking Hope. She went to that number and called us. We got we were able to, with some partners, go get her at the hotel there on College Drive, and we picked her up from there. She gave us lots of information. She really explained how it happened to her, how that she was brought to New Orleans and Baton Rouge because of the demand, how she earned her trafficker, $1,500 a day, how she was the top person who brought in the most money, so he was going to be after her to come back. Well, we were able, since we got her out, we got her to, with our partners, our coalition partners, Women's Hospital, we got over there with her. She was able to get the medical attention that she needed. She got all of her things done in a really quick manner. They really handled the case with excellence and with care and sensitivity for her. And we got her out to Hope House, and she was really blown away at everything. And a few of her comments that she made when she walked around on the property, because it's a 32-acre facility, it's got some beautiful trails and some things to really for healing and for things like that. And she walked around and she said, I can't believe that this is so beautiful and that someone created this, you know, for me, that I could be out here and I could enjoy the beauty. She said that when one time their trafficker was driving her from one place to another, and she said, oh, look how beautiful that is. And he said, oh, you think that's beautiful? She said, well, yeah, that was beautiful. We just passed. And he said, okay, I'm going to show you beauty. And he took her, pulled over, and took her out and put her in the trunk. And he said, from now on, you ride in the trunk.
My God.
She wasn't able to even look at beauty ever. And so just even enjoy an environment, which you and I would take completely for granted. And so she was able to be out there. And she said that she can't believe that her own family doesn't want her, and that her own, she has no one, you know, she goes, she has no one who cares about her, but that strangers would come together and to make a place like Hope House of Louisiana and make it beautiful and make it something for healing for her. And she is just grateful, just blown away, and she's doing fantastic. She's growing stronger and healthier every day, and she is, she's grateful for people that she doesn't even know that loves her.
Well, God bless her, and God bless you for all you're doing to rescue her and help put her back into a place where she can realize her full potential. We're talking to Lee and Laura Domain of Trafficking Hope here in Baton Rouge. Laura, what would somebody just listening to this program who wants to get involved, wants to help, wants to do something to assist you or to just work on this issue in general, what are some of the options?
Well, we have a lot of options. We want you to become educated and to do something. And what we tell people is that, you know, you can't do everything. This is a large issue, but you can do something. So you can go to traffickinghope.org, and you can look at the different ways to get involved. You can be a hope giver. You can be a hope volunteer. You can serve, and you can be a hope ambassador. And that will help your influence, which that is, who do you know? Do you know someone that could help us talk to someone at a school to teach the young people to help prevent and help them understand what is going on and for them to be aware? Can you help us with corporations or organizations that could that could help us with the funding, that we could have community nights? I mean, there's just so much. We just did St. Joseph's Academy. We just had a great community night last week, and they have allowed us to come in and to speak to the girls each, and you know, during the day at their classes, and then at night have a community night for their parents and for other people to understand what human trafficking is and how we can help do something about it, and then also prevent it with knowledge and education for the girls and for the young people.
So we've got about 45, Laura, we've got about 45 seconds left before we have to go to break, but I want to ask you very quickly, if you could just give us a couple of tips that what I should be on the lookout for around my neighborhood, around LSU, around other places in the community. What are some of the signs?
Some of the signs would be someone who looks, who is with someone that looks like they are not in control of themselves, as if they are being told what to do. They are not in control of their money. They have a backpack. If they look like a lot of our residents have said, they're not allowed to make eye contact with other people. That is, they were beaten for that. There's signals like that, and you can go to our website and check that out. There is also on our website, we have the Polaris Project hotline, which you can call in a tip. And then there's also an app called See Something, Send Something, that is for here in the state of Louisiana. You can download that on your iPhone, and you can send out a tip of something that you see that looks suspicious.
Thank you, Laura. We have to run to break, but thank you so much to you and Lee for being with us. We'll be back after this short break. This is the Jim Inkster Show on WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Bob Mann, filling in for Jim Inkster today. We're joined now by Miriam Goodman and Katie Crank, both of the Center for Court Innovation in New York, to talk more about human trafficking in this country and in Louisiana. Miriam Goodman is the coordinator of trafficking programs at the Center for Court Innovation. She's involved in many trafficking projects, including the creation of the Human Trafficking Intervention Courts in New York State, providing training to judges, lawyers, and clinicians on trauma, and working with trafficking survivors and working with family courts on this issue. She previously served as a therapist at Safe Horizons Counseling Center, where she provided trauma-focused therapy for crime victims. We'll be also joined by Katie Crank, who is the coordinator of domestic violence programs at the Center for Court Innovation. She provides technical assistance and strategic planning advice to courts wishing to improve their response to domestic violence, sexual assault, and trafficking cases. Katie Crank is interested in the response to gender-based violence both nationally and internationally, having spent a year developing a crisis hotline with a domestic violence agency in Ghana, as well as having assisted jurisdictions across the U.S. with the planning and implementation of specialized domestic violence courts. She's also an attorney in the state of New York and a licensed master social worker. Katie Crank, Miriam Goodman, welcome to the program this morning.
Thank you so much.
Human trafficking is something that the states and the federal governments are coming to terms with. What kind of laws out there? You look at all these laws around the country, particularly in New York, but around the country, and your resources to a lot of these states. What kind of laws are out there, and what are some of the more innovative approaches to this issue that you're seeing?
Yes, you know, we're just really beginning to see states try and address this on a statewide basis through legislation. So there's actually a couple of examples. In Texas, in particular, they've recently passed a law that really actually requires that they implement prostitution diversion programs, which is in some ways similar to human trafficking courts. in some of their larger counties. So that's one example. And New York, which we can certainly speak to since we're based here in New York, has actually done a similar thing via their unified court system. So while we don't have a statewide law that implemented human trafficking intervention courts, it's actually through the court system itself that we did that pilot. So Louisiana is certainly on the forefront in terms of, you know, putting this bill up for, in terms of just having a statewide response.
I'll note that there is a bill, as you alluded to, there is a bill that has been introduced in the legislature that would require that these human trafficking courts emphasize training for judges on the issues involved in human trafficking and specialize in hearing cases involving prostitution-related offenses for the purpose of identifying victims. So they would authorize district courts to designate a section or division of court for human trafficking. It doesn't appear that they would require it, but they would authorize it. How, in your experience, how eager are the courts to create these? Do they see a strong need for this, and is that something that we should expect to be popping up around Louisiana after this, if this bill is signed into law?
Definitely. I think, you know, we've actually worked with several stakeholders in Louisiana. I know that the National Association of Women Judges, and in particular Judge Joy Lebrano, who's in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Louisiana, is very interested in this issue. But even beyond Louisiana, we've definitely seen across the country judges who are wanting to come up with some response that's different than just criminalizing those who've been arrested for prostitution, because they see clearly that there's a need for services rather than criminalization, that there's actually trauma and victimization at the root of these crimes. And I think that that is really the impetus, you know, both in Louisiana and across the country when we work with courts to really create a specialized response, and I think to build on some of the existing specialized responses to issues like domestic violence and sexual assault, which many judges have been trained on, and many states have, you know, specialized courts that respond to those issues already in place.
I guess I should note that for listeners who might be curious why there's no one from Louisiana on to talk about this, Representative Julie Stokes from Kenner is the author of this this bill to create the special trafficking courts. She initially agreed to come on the program and then would not return my phone calls. I also invited Representative Neil Abramson of New Orleans, who is the author of another bill, and he was unable to be on the program. And also I tried to find someone in the Jindal administration to come on the program and talk about their efforts, and they would not get back to me and provide anyone to talk. So we are delighted to have Katie Crank and Miriam Goodman of the Center for Court Innovation here to help us understand this. What kind of training do judges need to deal with this problem better? What do they not know that they need to know? What are they not seeing in their normal course of their work that these programs can train them to see and do?
This is Miriam Goodman speaking. So the training that the judges in New York and elsewhere, when we provide training to judges in other jurisdictions, really focuses on defining what trafficking is, helping people understand myth versus reality, so that to be a victim of trafficking, you don't actually have to move anywhere. You can be from the town that you were arrested in or the city that you were arrested in, and really addressing those issues, as well as training on trauma and what that is and how does trauma manifest itself in defendants when the defendants are before them in court. So the idea that people's thoughts, their feelings, their actions, their behaviors within the court setting, how can we understand them through a trauma lens, and how can that then help judges and other court stakeholders change their response towards defendants that maybe prior to the training would be seen as challenging or non-compliant or not listening to, you know, what the court was ordering them to do.
We have Representative Julie Stokes, who has called in. She is the author of the bill that would create these district courts. Representative Stokes, welcome to the program. Can you tell us a little bit about your bill and what you hope to do with it?
Yes, hi. Sorry about that. I guess I'm a pretty new representative, and I'm not familiar with how to do these call-in shows, but I was trying to get in touch with you guys for the last hour, so I apologize for the confusion there. With the bill that I'm carrying is basically it's going to add the human trafficking court, more or less like an authorized division of the court or a section of court in any district court in Louisiana that voluntarily chooses to participate. That will authorize the presiding judge to be trained in issues of trafficking and also the support services available to victims. It will require that prostitution-related offenses be identified at arraignment and, if not resolved, transferred to the human trafficking section of that court. You know, I mean, the problem, quite frankly, is that often victims of human trafficking are treated as offenders by our justice system, when in fact their arrest represents a tremendous opportunity to rescue this person from an abusive environment in which they've been forced to live. And when at the end of our human trafficking commission that met all during the off season this year, we came to a few bills, and you know, one of the biggest, the big bill is really Representative Abramson, and this part broke off, and I was glad to be able to author it because, for me, it offers victims in need of rescue just a chance at rehabilitation and restoration.
So is this this bill is moving through pretty quickly through the legislature? You do see any roadblocks?
No, it's doing great. As a matter of fact, we are going to be in Senate committee in about a half an hour. So we've moved through the House. And now we're to the Senate.
And are you concerned that about funding for this and other aspects of the legislation that's going through the legislature, that the laws may be strengthened, but the money may not be there to enforce them? Is that a concern that you have?
Well, I certainly understand it. I mean, we're in a bit of a fiscal crisis in Louisiana. You know, we definitely have budget shortfalls, so that's going to be an issue at all times. I'm a CPA, so I get that. I think one of the good things about this particular part of the legislation and why it doesn't carry a fiscal note is because it is a voluntary program, so it offers each court, each district court, the opportunity to participate and to get that training on their own. I think that there's several different organizations, including the organization that you were talking to, Hope House. The police are going to be doing some training. I think if you look at Colonel Edmondson, he is extremely well-versed in this topic. And, you know, I think we can probably get some training to those individual judges that would like to get it in a, you know, in a relatively cost-effective manner is my hope. So I think on the court end of it, the cost will be borne by that court, so it won't be kicked up to the state level at that point. So right. it has a good shot of actually happening in this current fiscal environment.
Good. Representative Soaks, thanks for calling in. We appreciate your coming on and talking about your bill, and best of luck to you in the rest of the session.
No problem. Great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks. And goodbye. We are still on with Katie Crank and Miriam Goodman of the Center for Court Innovation. And I want to turn to what these states are doing, like Louisiana and others. One of the recommendations that the Human Trafficking Project has made is that states and other jurisdictions should pass laws that allow them to vacate criminal records for all crimes committed by adults that are determined to be a result of labor or sex trafficking victimization. What does that mean, and why would vacating those criminal records help solve this problem?
Yes, that is an incredibly important issue, and I think Representative Stokes didn't mention it, but I think that may actually be part of the bill in Louisiana as well. But we have seen New York, actually, we've seen some really great examples of how this can be helpful. And in fact, New York was the first state to pass a vacature law, although many states have since followed in New York's footsteps, because we just know that having a criminal record can affect so many areas of a criminal defendant's life. So Miriam actually has worked with a number of defendants who have actually benefited from the vacature law here in New York. Yeah, the mission of these human trafficking intervention courts in New York was to connect people to services and also to reduce a criminal record so that when people are ready to leave the life of prostitution trafficking, they won't have such a long criminal record. So to have a legal remedy that relieves people of their criminal record opens up opportunities for them to gain employment and education and all address all the barriers to choosing to live their life in a different way. And it's been incredible to see people who had 19, 25 convictions on their record have no record whatsoever after going through the vacature process.
I'll note that that actually the vacature provision is in a companion bill that Representative Neil Abramson has introduced, and one of the provisions of it is permits a person to file a motion to vacate a conviction for prostitution-related offenses which were committed as a direct result of being a victim of human trafficking or trafficking of children for sexual purposes. So that is in one of the bills that are currently going through the legislature in this current session. Are there other laws that those who are concerned about this in the legislature and law enforcement in Louisiana should be looking at? What other innovative approaches are out there?
Well, you know, it really is in its infancy in terms of laws that specifically look at the criminal justice response. So as far as I know, Texas, New York, and Louisiana are some of the three states that are really kind of at the forefront. But I do think that a lot of states are looking at ways in which they can build on an already existing response. So, for example, in the domestic violence arena, I mentioned earlier that there are already specialized domestic violence courts and judges with trainings in those issues. And I do think that if a local jurisdiction or a state wanted to build on that response, that could certainly be an area to look at. So perhaps not in so much through the legislative route, but even on the sort of minute level in terms of looking at local service providers' responses, I think that is going to be an area that we see really growing and that we have in fact seen as we've been working nationally on this issue. And I wanted to mention, too, that the way that we're able to work nationally is through the State Justice Institute. They've funded a human trafficking and the state courts collaborative, which we're a part of, along with several partners. So they are really enabling us to get a fuller picture of the different approaches that states are using. And I do think, too, that I'll just mention that many states are focusing first on the juvenile side of things. And I know your first guest, Laura, talked about some of the sort of juvenile issues. But we also are trying to help jurisdictions focus on adults and the ways in which, while it may not be as clear that they're victims up front, that if you offer these services and dig a little bit deeper, that you can see some of the trauma and victimization among adult defendants who've been arrested for prostitution or related charges.
So the idea is that an adult arrested for prostitution will be treated very differently after these laws are passed. How is an adult now treated in a court versus how that person would be treated once this vacature law is passed?
So if right now in New York, an adult is arrested on a prostitution-related offense, their case is sent to one of the human trafficking intervention courts. There are 11 across the state. And there, in those courts, there's a dedicated judge, prosecutor, defense attorney, and social service providers that are trained and aware of issues relating to human trafficking. And so often that defendant is offered a social service mandate.
Katie and Miriam, I'm sorry. We are completely out of time, and I apologize. We're going to have we're going to have to close it out. Thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck to you and all your work.
Thanks so much for having us.
The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.